Wow, it's exactly the same.
You lived here? How old is she anyway?
She's all right. What she does and the story she tells, she's just always been like that.
As a dream catcher, right, Grandma?
Goodwill passes through it. Evil is caught in the web. Lives to kill.
It's a smell. What is all this stuff?
I don't know. But it's not good.
When evil is too great for man to judge.
I know you're still freaked out about what happened. I won't let anything bad happen to you.
Who needs you to take care of me?
Ryan, you can't just let bullying push you around.
Now, send it back before it's too late. Stop the curse.
I'm not scared anymore.
You will be.
Bienvenue à la boîte de nuit. Welcome to the nightclub, where horror comes to party and where we are the ones who go full Wendigo. I'm Travis Maxwell-Boon, and I have a sweet tooth for redneck meth heads. Tonight, I'm joined by...
3-6 Rickles, also known as Christmas Wendigo Boy.
We also have with us...
I'm that NGC Trev, and I want to drink some swap water and become a Gundam suit for a Wendigo. Just saying.
We also got with us No Half Measures.
Hey, guys. Kodiko. Nice to meet y'all. And Rickles, I got a bone to pick with you later.
A bone? Oh, okay.
I got a bone to pick. Tonight, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to be covering a brand new 2024 horror film. A folk horror film. We've been just getting bombarded with folk horror on this podcast lately, and I fucking love it. Tonight we have with us the director of the movie, first of all, is called The Wendigo. Straight and to the point, and that's what you know you're in for, and goddamn do you get it. The director of the film is here with us tonight. We have Gabe Torres and the star of tonight's film, Marco Fuller. Thank you both very much for visiting the nightclub.
Absolutely. Great to be here. Talk to our film.
Likewise.
What I like to do when we have new or first time guests, rather, is get a little introduction with your history of horror. I like to know the first thing that you ever saw that was in the horror genre that got you into horror, at least piqued your interest enough to where now at this point, you know, you've made a film. It's out there for the world to see. What would be the first thing that that you saw that like, oh shit, this is amazing?
Yeah, my earliest recollections were seeing Robert Wise's The Haunting as a child and being completely terrified by that movie, seeing it on TV. And then I would just watch every horror film that happened on Saturday nights out of Rochester Channel 10 growing up in upstate New York. They had a thing called Frightening Flickers on Saturday night. So my parents let me stay up and watch every horror film. And I saw all the Universal classics on that, and then got into a lot of the like 70s kind of, you know, stuff, Night of the Living Dead, and right into even the crazy thing like Legend of Boggy Creek freaked me out as a kid.
Oh, that werewolf, yes. Bigfoot.
Love that, yeah. sort of verite documentary realism of it. I loved that kind of stuff. And yeah, so that was like the early influences.
I like that you came up with the horror hosts. Like, that's dope. We're all Joe Bob fans here, so keeping that tradition alive. What about you, Marco? What was the first thing you saw that really got you goat?
I mean, for me, it was really like the Child's Play movies, like Chucky. I was so obsessed with Chucky, and then like the Leprechaun, stuff like that. But,
yeah, we covered Child's Play not too long ago.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah,
yep.
That's wild that you like the Chucky, the Leprechaun, and the horror host thing. That's dope too. Like, I feel like we're amongst friends here. Because yeah, like Trev said, we just covered that. That was a big influence for all of us as well. We're all in our 30s, so that's the era we came up in. And look at that Hen and Lotter back there. Yeah, boy. That's another movie we covered. But we'll skip all the niceties that we normally do here at the nightclub, and we're gonna go ahead and dive into this scene by scene breakdown of the Wendigo. What you wanna do for tonight's film is you're gonna wanna go visit your grandma. Have her teach you all the rural folk ways and then feed you some crazy sewer concoction that makes you see through meth gator eyes.
Okay, so what you're going to want to do is you're going to snort a line of Wendigo blood, and then you're going to drag a Christmas tree 5 miles back to your house to make your mom happy so she doesn't send you to jail. Yeah.
What you're going to want to do is not walk around the woods like you're Scooby-Doo in the gang and stumble on a fucking meth den.
Get attacked by Walter White and the boys.
Yeah. What you want to do is go rent the Wendigo and see this movie.
Boom!
Yeah. Nice.
What you're really going to want to do is actually watch the movie in its entirety to have what you really need to do live. I was only able to catch the first act, the first 30 minutes of the movie. I plan to finish it, but
awesome.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert! Spoiler alert!
I apologize.
Look at Cody. No! But you owning that shit. You owning that shit.
You owned up to it.
He was nice about it too. Yeah, thanks for.
He's been doing our 2023 horror list, and he hasn't had a chance to catch up to the stuff that we have on the docket at the moment. The other three of us are professionals. Anyway, that's what you're gonna want to do if you're gonna watch tonight's film. And Gabe, this movie is available now. Where can and I want to tell the listeners to go see it before they listen to us break this shit down. Where can they find The Wendigo?
You can find it on Amazon, Apple, Vudu, and a whole other slew of VOD platforms.
That's right, folks, and it's available now.
Let the ritual begin.
This is possibly the first ever Wendigo Christmas horror film. Low key
right,
Christmas
right.
Wendigo horror movie. I didn't know what I was. I didn't know it was going to be a folk slash holiday horror movie when I started this thing. And I was delighted. I was delighted. I'm not going to lie. So you could, you know, go watch it now, but you could also rewatch it for Christmas. Just saying. It does have enough Christmas vibes along with Texas Chainsaw Massacre vibes. With all the dangling bones and all that, very dope, very dope.
For sure.
But it's the same old, it's the same old controversy. Is it a Christmas movie or is it a horror movie? Is Die Hard a Christmas movie or an action movie?
Is
Wendigo a Christmas movie or is Wendigo a horror movie? Can it be both?
I'm gonna lean heavy into hell yes, it is.
Both.
Claim it.
All
claim
right.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
The movie starts with a quote from the Ojibwe tribe. When an evil is too great for man to judge, the Wendigo is called upon. Or did I paraphrase that? Did I butcher that?
Yeah, that's about right. Yeah.
Okay. I like a movie that starts with a quote. Very cool. And you get this period piece opening with these Native Americans doing a chant and a bit of a chase. And I like the shot where you see the silhouette of the Wendigo's hand come down into the frame. And the great thing about this opening is you don't get to see the creature. You don't get to see it.
Right.
You see like a blurred out shot of the Wendigo. You see a hand clutching a throat, but you don't get to see the creature. And I dig that when they hold back on when y'all held back on showing. And I can't wait to get to that. You do get a good gut ripping though.
Right off the bat.
Yeah. A good gut ripping. That was kind of the idea, was to progressively show a little more and a little more of the creature as it goes on till we get full on for the final, you know, confrontation in the end.
Hell yeah. And y'all did a great job of doing the Spielberg, like, less is more, don't show the shark. You know, y'all held back, I think, amazingly with the way y'all did this. Any thoughts on the opening shots, guys?
I like how it got into the gore, like, right away.
I think
that's, you have to kind of do that, right? I feel like, well, you don't have to do it, but I feel like if you do that, you already have me sold within the first 5 minutes. And that's a good thing, right?
The first thing I noticed was that it's a period piece, but I was like, man, this setting is just the fucking snowy trees and everything. I was like, this is dope. So the cold open period piece got me. Plus you gave me the gore, I was sold right away.
The first thing I noticed that of what I watched of it, it was really shot beautifully. It was really precise, and the cinematography was really well done.
Yeah, like I like the way the camera pans through the trees and stuff. It looks great.
Right. I like directors who know where to put that camera.
And there he is. Yeah, he's right there.
We had a lot of fun with that. I know.
Yeah, and we had a lot of fun with that opening. And I think it, you know, from page to screen, from the script to how it came out, I was really happy with. We were able to really, you know, lean into, you know, the Native American themes and set it up with that. The chant you hear is an actual Ojibwe chant. And we have, you know, we set up the legend, and we set up the little girl who will ultimately be the grandmother. And I think the actors all do a great job in that cold open. The main guy who plays the girl's father is Tatanka Means, who's currently in Killers of the Flower Moon and taking off.
What?
Saw that.
Yeah. He's the Native American FBI agent who goes undercover in that film.
You got the Scorsese actors up in your flick. Damn. That's dope.
It's wild, man.
But it's kind of like the little setup, you know, it's like, what's this going to be? Or we're in the past, but then we meet this modern family that Marco's a part of. And then, you know, that generationally it takes off, and then you start to understand the grandmother's, you know, hundreds of years old.
Oh, before we jump to that, which that's a very interesting part of the plot, I want to give some kudos to this title card sequence. I love a good title card. And when you have an owl eating roadside viscera as your title card.
Yes.
Chef's kiss. Mwah. Beautiful.
Love it.
That was awesome. Very, very nice.
And to touch on what Cody said, and I'm going to say it for the whole movie, cinematography is super on point. Whenever we got approached to cover this film, and I saw the trailer, whenever you get approached and it's an indie film, there's always a curve that you take into consideration. At least I do. We do. Because people have budgets and whatnot. Whenever I saw the trailer and I saw how it was shot, I was like, oh, shit, they know how to use the camera. They know how to use lighting. Like, this is going to be at least a feast for the eyes. And the movie didn't disappoint on that level for sure. Right away here.
Absolutely.
At the beginning.
A feast for the eyes.
Yeah. But yeah, I like the little bit of humor here at the beginning where the mom and I don't have names for the characters. So I have names. I've got names I wrote down. Marco. Your son, bro, because you the son and the brother. your sister is her name is Sue, right?
Bree.
Okay, well, I called her Sue Jitsu because she knows jujitsu. and you got G Mom and just Mom. So Mom is there. So I'm just letting y'all know how I took my notes. So when that comes up, forgive me. oh yeah. You see how to meet the how'd I say that? How the meat is grinded, or what they say that?
Oh, you got me. I don't know.
I'm fucking up that expression. I'm bad at expressions.
Under the fridge, man. No big deal.
Yeah.
How the sausage is made.
How the sausage is made. Thank you, sir. Thank you. Thank you. yeah. So the little bit of humor here at the beginning where the cop is on the phone with the mom and he's trying to like guide her to where she needs to go, to grandma's house. To grandma's house we go. Shout out the Mary Kate and Ashley Olsen. another Christmas movie. Holy shit. And so the guy, there's this guy in the backseat of the cop's car who's like, man, I gotta listen to this crap. And the cop reaches in and turns up the fucking radio and it's Christmas music just blaring. And that's my first indication that, oh, this is a Christmas horror movie? Fuck yeah. Like, dope. Yeah.
The humor hits all the right notes.
Mm-hmm.
From what I saw, again, like, I assume the humor is an aspect throughout the whole thing. It was really hitting hitting the marks.
It drops off. The humor kind of goes away after the halfway mark about, because the movie switches gears and goes full serious mode. But one thing, and this is meant as a compliment, and it's crazy that Marco brought this up, because, and Gabe, I mean this as a compliment, as a 90s kid myself, this felt like a feature length Are You Afraid of the Dark, but for adults. Like,
no, for sure.
That's what it had the vibe of. With way better cinematography and acting, I'll say, based on that show. But I mean that in a nostalgic way that, like, I don't know if people are hitting on that nerve yet. I don't think that nerve has been touched exactly yet, except for maybe Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark might be the only movie I can think of that hits on that nerve. What do you think about that? Was that something that you had in mind, or maybe an inspiration, or not even close?
For me, it wasn't conscious, but I do think that the film as a whole has sort of a 90s horror vibe, for sure.
Nice, nice, great.
You know, the whole kind of like pre-CGI, you know, doing the creature practically and taking this whole sort of family aspect of it, all those things sort of play into those, you know, sort of, you know, 80s and 90s vibes, you know, even a little bit of the Spielberg Amazing Stories kind of thing, you know, with the familial aspects of it.
Well, mm-hmm.
What did you get out of it, Marco, when you read the script? Did you have that feeling?
No, I mean, I didn't really see it coming until that first day on set, really. But you kind of get the better idea of the pacing and how the shots are being set up and stuff like that. And then, of course, when you watch the film, you're like, oh, okay, it kind of makes sense. You can kind of see it better, obviously. It was a nice surprise. I liked it.
Yeah, and I did want to say, like, it definitely feels like a 90s movie, but I do like how you blended current day feel to it, right? Just some of the aspects of it, right? Like Marco's character likes playing Fortnite, right? My kids, my son loves Fortnite. the fact that his sister is like a badass in jiu-jitsu, you know, that's definitely a more modern day thing than it is back in the 90s from what I can remember, right? Strong female character, but still modern day. I just love that aspect of it too.
Yeah.
And we tried to also take like grandma's house and kind of make it sort of timeless, like it had been there since the 70s or 80s and frozen in time. You almost feel you could like lean over and pull a magazine out of the rack and it would be 1980s. There's still old style telephones and lamps and things like, you know, when they walk in, you know, even the mother says, it's like, wow, nothing's changed. And that's because, you know, grandma's just lived the same way for years, you know. So the whole aspect of the production design of the inside of the house was to make it like there was nothing in the frame that would say this is 2024 or this is 2000 or 90. It was supposed to be somewhat ambiguous as to time frame.
I picture mom walking in and she pulls out a magazine and it's a Hustler from the fucking 70s. She's like, oh, nothing's changed. Grandma likes her Hustler magazine.
look, I'm definitely going to say I felt a little bit older when she was going through her CD collection with her daughter. And I was like, but like CDs were like yesterday. Like, what are we doing? You know, I'm only 35, but like the generational gap is there now. It's like CDs are like, you know, VHS and cassette tapes for me. But I mean, I also saw 8-tracks too when I was really young. So, you know, that was a cool little add-in, I think, to kind of set the tone of the age gap between the mom, the daughter, you know, all that other stuff.
And like Gabe had mentioned, there's a ginormous age gap between grandma and the rest of the family. There's a line where they're talking to grandma. They find her, by the way, hiding under some blanket in the attic like she's some witch doctor. Really cool mm-hmm. scene.
Yes.
She's shooing away.
Yeah.
That's your first real jump scare, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Grandma jump scare. I remember making a note of that.
The set design too, and when I said Texas Chainsaw, I'm not kidding with the like the yeah. dank again. If you just tie a bone to it, it could be from KFC. I don't care. You tie a bone to a string and dangle it. I'm on camera. I'm like, yep, I'm there. I'm sold. I love it because I love.
We talked about that. You know, having that Texas Chainsaw Massacre feel to the inside, the sets that were built, and. You know, I pulled up some stills from Wicker Man, you know, when they were building the Scarecrow Wendigo and said, let's make it look like Wicker Man and have that kind of vibe, too. Yeah.
I love that you said Scarecrow Wendigo because my notes yep. in this movie, I call it the Wendicrow, the whole movie. Yeah. and I love it. I love it.
Yes. I love how the Wendigo looked. I love like the branch like look of it. Because I've seen some other, obviously, we've seen some other Wendigos out there and there's a wide range of stuff. I kind of like how the Wendigo is made because it makes me think that not every Wendigo is going to be the same because it's going to be in the image of the person that basically signs the contract with the Wendigo, right?
Right. So. And Grandma even says, you know, it'll take the form of the forest and of you.
Yes.
You know, when she's sort of coaching him. And so you look, his skin looks like tree bark and he has branches coming out of him, but he has the skull of the Scarecrow and then he has Rye in him, and there's the sort of the mind meld between Rye and the Wendigo.
This was wicked. Oh, dude, you got to finish the movie because it gets fucking awesome. There's a scene I want to jump right back to Grandma's age because I do have it chronologically, where one of the characters, I forget who, asks how old is she. I think it's the daughter, Sujitsu, and the mom says, if I'm fucking up the script, let me know, but I think I wrote down my grandma used to call her grandma, you do the math.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
She says I'm not really sure. All I know is that my grandma used to call her.
So that's that right there kind of gave me the spookies and I was like, oh shit, like this woman is the hills. Like she's been there. Like fuck yeah, like I like that aspect of it that's kind of cosmic, which we like cosmic shit on this podcast.
Yeah, we do.
So and to live forever, the grandma ends up saying, I like this line, to live forever means watching everyone you love die, and that's so Dracula, that's so vampiric, and the
classic themes of horror that we worked into the script and writing it. Yeah.
Now, Marco, forgive me for my next joke, but I wrote it and I'm going to say it because y'all are both being good sports about this.
Uh-oh.
The brother and the sister wrestle a lot. I'm just saying. What? Nightclub? What do you want from me, bitch? No, Marco, this is a good opportunity to ask you about. How old are you, if you don't mind me asking that?
I'm 34. I turned 35 in a couple months.
So. Holy shit. Okay. Well, we're all the same age right here.
Nice.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
So getting this role and going on set, Gabe seems like a fucking awesome guy to work with. Your cast mates seem like awesome people to work with. Tell us a little bit about just like being on set, you know, like maybe if you have a fun memory from whatever moment that y'all were filming where maybe y'all all cracked up or something like that. I don't know. Anything you want to tell us?
I mean, so we were filming in Ann Arbor, Michigan. It was during winter, right? We started in November, cold months. And I mean, this was like my first lead for a feature. I've done, you know, TV and stuff like that, but nothing like this. I remember a couple conversations with Gabe, and he's like, you know, it's going to be tough, but do everything you can do on set. Cinema lives forever. And so we kind of had that mentality go into it, and hours are super long and stuff like that. We try to find little, I guess, moments of lightness between like Five Old Bree and I, Sujitsu. You know, we just try to develop that brother-sister relationship. So I'm kind of joking with her on set, and she has this huge martial arts background and stuff like that. So I'd start, like, you know, play fighting her and stuff like that. And she'd jab me in the stomach and, you know, knock the wind out of me.
Nice.
That was fun, you know, and especially with Troy, who plays the Wendigo. We kind of mess with him every now and then on set and on that sound stage for Grandma's house. So I can't remember anything too specific where it was, you know, everyone's, oh, I guess that it was one of the last shots we did for the film. And this part in the movie is when I'm evoking the Wendigo. So I'm holding the skull up, you know, I'm saying the words and the skull, right?
Fuck yeah.
So the entire shoot, we did everything, what, like 2 to 4 takes max. And, you know, this is the last shot. We think it's gonna be super easy. And so the way they shot this, they tilted the camera, right? That's right, Gabe. You tilt the camera like that, right?
Yeah, yeah. I tilted sideways, yeah.
Yeah, and so the effigy is kind of like laying horizontal, and I come into frames kind of like over the top of it, so it looks like I'm like standing up, and I drop the mask. So I was like, oh, this is easy. I got this. It took me 17 takes because every time
wow.
Like, I got this. I can do this. I can do this. But 17 takes for just that one shot where you're just like, that was probably easy.
It's a technical thing, you know. It's a great gag. You never see it because you just turn the camera sideways, you turn Marco sideways, and then it looks like the mask is like jumping out of his hand, but he's literally just dropping it to the ground, you know.
That is movie magic right there. Audience.
It was all done in camera. It was part of that whole sort of practical effect kind of thing, you know.
Oh, audience, listen to this. That is movie magic, because when I was watching that scene, and we will touch on it in a second, but since you brought it up, holy fuck, that's one of the first, I'm going to call it a practical effect because I didn't know what I was looking at. So you pulled off the illusion to me. I didn't know how you did it. And so to hear that it was quote unquote that simple, even though Marco flubbed it 16 times, JK, JK, no, man. Right. But
he's literally laying on a picnic table, leaning out over it, and the Wendigo's like on an apple box, you know, underneath him, and it's just the camera sideways, and he's basically planking off this picnic table and then having to just drop the mask but the camera sideways, so the illusion is it looks like it jumps out of his hand and goes left to right off on screen. You know?
Full on, it looked magnetic. It looked magnetic.
Right. Yeah,
it
looks that's, so the, that's the whole, yeah, that's the way it's supposed, it looks like it's being sucked to the scarecrow.
Yes. You
know? Yeah, yeah.
Fucking phenomenal. So the siblings investigate this barn the next day, and they get jump scared by a rodent of some kind, and then that's when they find the Wendicrow for the first time. Awesome, right. Awesome Wendicrow.
Yep.
And Grandma's making a dream catcher outside, and she tells the kids about the Wendigo. This is when we get the lore dump, and I love a good lore dump. I love lore. We all love lore.
Yep. We them lore boys.
He's great selling that story. It's like,
yes, she is.
You know, the one thing about horror films, you guys watch a lot of them, is that most of them are pretty fucking silly, right? And the only way you can really get people invested is if you have a great cast like Casey, like Marco, like Fievel, who you're invested in, and they live in that reality, and you buy into the reality of what is essentially a very silly story. And so when you have people who are that committed in their performances, you go along. When Grandma tells this story, you're invested. You know, when Marco's transforming as he does, you know, back and forth from his Wendigo persona to being Rye, you're invested because these actors pull it off. I think that's the key to great horror. You know, you watch Ellen Burstyn in The Exorcist and you're like blown fucking away because she's so real in those moments.
Fucking A, man. Whenever she's saying the lines, "It eats the flesh of evil and becomes evil." Sometimes the dream catcher can bind it, but it can also fail. And she's like, "It won't die until the one that summoned it is punished and dies with it." Like, it's all of this is building up a. So I've seen. I'm speaking for me. I know some of my co-hosts have seen these movies as well, but they're Wendigo related. Ravenous. And the movie from the early 2000s, Wendigo, that starred the young brother from Malcolm in the Middle, two different
that's,
takes.
That's a gem.
It's a gem.
That's a gem, yeah.
Both of those movies are, in my opinion, but they're both very different takes on the Wendigo, and this is a whole new take on the Wendigo. That, and I've done a little bit of research on the Wendigo legend for an episode I did a long time ago on Ravenous and the Ojibwe tribe and different historical accounts of actual like hangings that happened because of Wendigo accusations and whatnot. But this had bits of lore in it that I either overlooked, or I guess what I'm asking is, is this all true to legend, or is some of this made particularly for this movie?
There are aspects of true legend, and then some of it sewed together into, you know, sort of a fictional narrative. The conjuring aspect of it is fictional. The stories of the cannibalism and all of that come from true legend. Or it was kind of like the Wendigo legend was created, sort of like making him into a boogeyman to keep people from turning to cannibalism during, you know, mm-hmm. times of famine. And they'd say, oh, the Wendigo will get you if you eat from the flesh, you know, and that was all true. That comes mm-hmm. from legend.
Yes. Yeah. So the ritual aspect that grandma does, cause we like
that was do. All made up. Yeah.
I love that.
I loved it anyway. Well, yeah.
I'm fine with it. The swamp was water was very enticing.
Fuck yeah. We're all from we're all four of us are from Louisiana. And so yeah. when you got the swamp water witchy ritual shit going on,
right?
You got us.
That's got Friday us. Night yeah. in New Orleans.
Yeah, yeah, we have a little bit of voodoo down here. So, you know.
Hell yeah.
We like the witchy stuff.
Marco, how did that taste, by the way?
Hibiscus tea, pretty much. It was a
nice. Okay. There we go. I'm glad he didn't make you like actually drink swamp water.
Let's jump to the when Brosan and Sujitsu. What are y'all's characters' names? I'm being jokey, but I want to pay respect.
It's Ryan and Bree.
Ryan and Bree.
Okay. When Ryan and Bree go off into the woods to cut down a tree with a fucking axe, I'm like, guys, y'all are gonna be out there for 3 days. that part. It made me laugh, and as like Gabe said earlier, sometimes the plot elements are silly, but that shit made me laugh, and that's endearing to me. It's like these motherfuckers think they're gonna go chop down a whole ass tree with that axe, cousins. I love it though. So y'all go off into the woods, and y'all end up stumbling across Walter White's meth empire in the beginning, and Badger and Skinny Pete show up, followed quickly by Jesse.
Yeah,
and. And they're like, they go from 0 to 100 real
instantly.
Quick.
Yeah, they do.
Real quick.
Yeah.
They're like,
we're
going to toss this boy in the well. Let's shoot him. No, it's got to look like an accident.
Yes.
It won't matter. The rats will eat him. We don't care.
Yeah.
We're on meth.
It's very deliverance for sure. That's very deliverance.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Well, I like that.
What's the
actor? And the character Ben, like, immediately, like from the time I saw him in the car, I'm like, this is like crackhead Devin Sawa. This guy is great. So I was in it, dude.
Look, yeah. They took on a life of their own. I think we ended up nicknaming the trio of them the Three Methketeers.
Oh, yeah. Nice,
right,
nice.
Marco?
That's great.
That's right.
That what you got? Did you come up with that? Who came up with that? I think you did, didn't you?
I'll take credit for it. I didn't. But
there you go. Nice. There you go.
There you go, Marco. nice. God, it's high school all over again.
I've been thinking that the whole time. I had to get it out at least once. I'm sorry.
Fuck yeah. What's the actress's name that plays Bree?
Fievel Stewart.
Fievel and everyone else who set up this entire scene. Marco, obviously, you were there. But like everyone who set up this scene, the action is so fluid and the pacing of it is incredible because it's Ryan or Rye?
Rye.
Either one.
Rye. Yeah. Rye's being drugged by a rope by the meth heads out of this fucking meth barn. And Bree is sneaking up behind with the axe in hand, and the meth heads are so fucking like caught up in their little scheme that they don't see her.
That's a hell of a drug.
Yeah, and the scene, the pacing, she hits one in the face. They let go of him, but then grab the rope and whip him around. He does an incredible flip. She cuts the rope. He gets free. and they run off. And it's like the way it happens. And I'm watching this like with the eye of this is an indie horror movie. And so far, everything's been top notch. It's like an action sequence going on here. And boom, 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 one thing after the other. Pacing, tension, all built up, all done great, all executed perfectly. And I feel like they really got away from a dire situation because their plan was to toss Rye into a fucking well, like in the ground. That would have been a horrible outcome.
Yes.
So I do want to say, let's back it up just a little bit. The moment where like she frees you and you run, like Rye runs, and then they catch that rope, and like you basically just get slammed backwards by your neck.
Yeah.
I thought they might have killed you at that point. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Like the force, because I'm like, they just snapped his neck.
It was a wicked whip.
Is Bree gonna summon the Wendigo to avenge her brother? Because like I didn't know, you know, like because if you read the synopsis, it just says American teenager. So like you don't know who's summoning the Wendigo really. There's two of y'all. You're both teenagers. So I was like, did they just kill him? And then you got up, and I was like, oh, cool, okay, he's not dead. Let's keep going. It just looked brutal as hell. Yeah,
dude, it went off the charts right there. Do y'all have anything to say about this sequence?
Man, I do.
I think Marco does.
Yeah,
he got yanked in rehearsal.
Yeah. So you know, we had an awesome stunt coordinator, and my stunt double was amazing. They've been practicing this stunt, you know, for probably about a week or two, I think.
Yeah.
So we get all the way. We film it piece by piece that day, and the bit where, you know, by the well, Bree comes in, I stand up, I start running, and then Tuck, played by Justin Maine, grabs that rope and yanks it. You know, we had blocked it out to where I start running, and we just cut it when Tuck grabs the rope and he's about to yank, we cut. So we're shooting this first take. I stand up to run away, the rope falls between my legs, I'm kind of stumbling. And the next thing I know, I'm in the air and I land on my back. So what happened? Yeah, and I just freeze. I'm on my back. I'm like, I just snapped my neck in half. So you know, when you were saying that, I was like, huh, it's funny because that almost happened. But when I stood up to run, Justin, you know, he's in the scene. He's in the moment. He just yanked that rope, flips me over, and I just laid there. And
oh my god, dude!
Everybody on set was like, "R.I.P. Marco."
Yeah. Quiet, I swear.
Quiet,
like, yeah. Like I was like 10 minutes, but, you know, I got up and we were okay. And then I was a little sore after that, but we got back through it. The stunt double had like a harness on, so it wasn't pulling on his neck. But he made it look great. He made it look good. So
I like that you took a bump, though. I like that you took a fucking bump for the art, for the craft.
Oh, yeah, man.
I get beat up every time we do podcasts. Ask my co-host. Last time we did a podcast, we were in New Orleans,
and I
back of my head planted into a bar.
Yeah. Yep.
Ouch.
Even podcasting can be dangerous, folks. No, I'm just kidding. What y'all do? I'm just joking. What actors and stunt doubles do is fucking legit, man. And that was a legit ass scene.
It was a rough shoot. I mean, it was very cold, and you're out in the woods, and you know the cast is very cold, and the crew is very cold, so. I mean, it was, you know, like 1 and 2 degrees, some of those sequences we were shooting sometimes, you know, right before Thanksgiving, It got super cold. So that's just, you know, from, you know, 4 p.m. till 5 or 6 a.m. outside all night. It's rough.
Yeah. People don't think about the environment that sometimes when you're watching a film, if everything isn't super ridiculous Marvel budget, not everybody's inside a nice air conditioned or heated environment. So I think it lends to the story and the scene whenever people might be a little bit uncomfortable. They might not be quite as nice and content. You know what I'm saying?
Even when we built all the sets for the inside of the house was built in an old car barn. You know, it was like this storage barn. And that was so cold that when the actors are standing in the living room inside, you could see their breath. So we had to then like heat the set real quick before each shot so that you wouldn't see the actor's breath standing in the living room or the kitchen. You know?
Wow.
Man, so y'all were just constantly going back and forth between hot and cold.
Oh, yes. Man. Swamp, dude.
Mad props.
After this happens, Rye
and I'm sorry to cut you off, but that's like very Sam Raimi, man, because like when they filmed Evil Dead, they were burning furniture in the living room to stay warm, like literally between shots, which is wild.
Evil Dead 1 was a shit show.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah. Or like Texas Chainsaw, the original.
It was also shot in Michigan, you know? Also shot in Michigan.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
They had well.
The Evil Dead movies were shot in Michigan as well. Those are Michigan boys, right?
I have to be a nerd.
I'm not sure.
I gotta be a nerd right now, and I gotta say no, sir. It was Tennessee, actually.
Tennessee.
They're from Michigan, but what happened was Sam said Tennessee's gonna have a warmer winter. Let's go there. But that year, they had a record cold winter in Tennessee and a record high winter in Michigan.
Oh fuck!
So they got fucked big time. But yeah, so
made a masterpiece.
They did.
Masterpiece. So you know,
Ryan is nervous that the Walter White gang is gonna come and get him because they's like, we know where you live, while they're running away. So he goes to Grandma and he's like, I need some solace. I need some peace of mind. Can you make me a Wendigo? I'm paraphrasing the shit out of all of this, y'all. But
yeah,
I'm just saying.
She tried to convince him not to, and he was very like, no, we need to do this.
Mm-hmm. She has a Wendigo skull. Right, the skull that we were talking about earlier, and she basically brews him up a swamp donkey concoction, and he drinks that hibiscus tea, and he's like, "God damn, this is the best thing I ever had." No, not. but my boy goes outside, and that's when you do get the magnetic skull suck. All right,
this sounds pretty.
All of this is shot.
Skull suck.
It's interwoven. The narrative is interwoven between her performing the ritual and Ryan.
Yeah.
Well, she's explaining the ritual and concocting it, and Ryan is performing the ritual, and it's all interwoven. And this is like, this is just how you want to edit a scene like this. Instead of just going from one to the next, You could do it like that, but this way is like, it makes it special. It makes it stand out.
It was written in the script as two separate scenes, and when I shot the two scenes, I knew that I always wanted to intercut the two and have her voicing over the actions he's doing rather than just doing compartmentalized, do this one scene, then do the second scene. But if you blended the two together, it would be more elegant and cinematic and mysterious, you know, as you're kind of flashing forward to what Rye's about to do as she's explaining it. I thought it was a lot cooler cinematic.
Yeah, I felt like it being shot like that definitely reinforced the mysticism of it.
Yeah.
It gave it that vibe, right? Like, oh shit, things are going down. It's about to get crazy. And I'm ready for it. I'm ready for the ride, right?
The scene between Ryan and Marco can speak to this, between Ryan and his grandmother, is just such a wonderful scene because they're just playing it so well. And I know Ryan, you know, speaks very eloquently about his work with Casey, so I'll let him talk about that. But, you know, just letting that play out on tape and then being able to then intercut it with sort of the more, you know, meat and potatoes action of the procedural stuff of the Wendigo was helpful.
I'm laughing at him because Marco's over there, like, he's laughing. Marco, what you laughing about? I'm just like, oh shit.
No, I just remember that scene because you know, I read it on paper, and you know, you kind of have a general idea of how you want to play it, But with that, I didn't really have too much. I just knew it was, you know, an important scene for the film. And that night when Casey and I sat down to do the scene, she's such an amazing actor. She just pulls all these emotions out of you. Because there's nowhere in that script that said, you know, Rising to be crying and to be all emotional and worked up because he wants to kill these guys. But the way Casey was, you know, performing it and grabbing me and shaking me, like, you know, this is real, real shit. Just brought all of these emotions out of me. So on the first take, I'm crying, you know, my eyes are all watery and stuff. We get done, Gabe says cut, I'm like, shit, that was only the first take. Because I have to do
wow. Eyes oh, on man.
Okay, well, let's just go for it. But ended up coming out really nice, and I'm glad the way that he pieced it together.
I'm really happy with what Marco did in that scene, what Casey did in that scene. And then I just sort of took what they did and let that sort of guide the emotional through line of the intercutting in the scene. Cause, you know, like he says, on paper, it's very procedural. And then once you bring a scene to life with actors, that kind of dictates the tone and the pace of the cutting, and they bring the characters to life. And I think that, you know, watching Marco work with Casey, cause I think there's also and you can agree or disagree, Marco, but she's a very venerable actress within the Native American community. And I know he had a great respect for her. And I think that translated into the generational aspect of their characters when they played together.
Yeah, Gabe's definitely right on that. It's just kind of funny, like, Ry's character arc throughout the whole film, he just kind of shows up, he's like, yeah, grandma, whatever. And then he, like, ends up really just getting close to grandma, and it's, like, his best friend throughout the film.
But it's also, I think there's a metaphor to his arc that is about generations and about being close to your culture. Because early on in the movie, you know, she says to him, he goes, oh, you know, you're half Native American. And he's like, yeah, whatever. And he kind of blows it off. But he starts to sort of appreciate his heritage through the grandmother, even though it's in this perverse way of these legends of the Ojibwe. And his character arc is a discovery of not only, you know, the dangers of conjuring something like the Wendigo, but it's also about his heritage and appreciating that and taking that with him when he rides off in the car. And it was important for us to cast First Nations Native American actors in the film, and that was, you know, kind of the mandate. And we had a wonderful casting director who works in that community, Angelique Midthunder. And, you know, that was a priority, was to find the best actors from that community.
I think
that's awesome.
I think that's great. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what's great is that, you know, when you do a film that has a very specific, you know, minority community, you're able to get like the best of the best within that community, because there's less jobs for specific people, and Marco can speak to this. So you get the best people even for a smaller film, because everybody wants to, you know, to work and get characters. So you're always finding these amazing actors who want to come do even, you know, a small horror film like ours. So that was a great blessing to us.
That's wonderful.
In the next few scenes here, you get a lot of death and murder and practical effects.
Yeah.
So, Mom, what's Mom's character name? I'm gonna stop calling her Mom.
Claire
yeah. And Bree, they go and they find Ryan. And, well, no, I'm jumping kind of way too far ahead. I was going to when he's looking like the Undertaker, like rolling his eyes in the back of his head and shit. that was dope. They're eating dinner, and that's when Ryan starts to like transform, but he's not transforming. He's kind of inhabiting, if you will. And the Wendigo is inhabiting him. I like the possession.
Tug of war, kind of.
It's like a tug of war and a possession aspect. It's both. And it's interesting. And it's interesting how it's shown and what happens. You get a bunch of kill scenes that yeah. I don't want to spoil everything that happens in the kill scenes for listeners that are going to watch this movie, because y'all all need to go watch this movie. But you do eventually get a Wendigo reveal, and y'all, so I'm watching this movie, I've got it on a big screen TV, and I'm looking at it and I'm like, this looks practical. Everything I'm seeing looks practical. And I'm like, normally indie horror movies will lean towards CG because they can't afford practical. And I'm like, this looks too good to be CG. This, right. Isn't that weird how you say it? That, like, this looks too good to be CG.
Yeah, no, but, you know, I was all leaning back into, like, let's do Pumpkinhead. Let's do, you know.
Yes.
That, kind of, that was kind of our mantra, was like, we watch Pumpkinhead again and say, let's make our Wendigo as cool as Pumpkinhead, you know?
I love that.
This, this creature, this costume is
so dope.
A 10 out of 10. And the way that it's framed consistently through the movie, the way you choose to frame it, whether it's from behind, from the side, it's like you got the perfect angles to really let the costume shine and show off the monster, even when it's ripping doors off cars. Well, I feel like it ripped a door off a car, or at least it threw a guy out of a car.
It picked a car up is what happened.
Yeah.
So and I do love how that was shot, though, because you don't see the full Wendigo, but then you do eventually see, like, Ryan taking the place in the moment. So you see Ryan lifting up on his
cut
bed
back
frame.
And forth. Right.
Yeah.
And it cuts back and forth.
Cool, man.
I love that shot, because I was like, holy shit, that's awesome. Because you see the car come up and then you see Ryan doing this with his bed frame. I'm like, damn.
And it really explains what's going on.
Yeah. It shows the tether.
Instead of explaining. Right.
Yeah.
Instead of explaining it with dialogue, which would have probably been cheesy somehow, what it did was it showed you visually what was going on with the back and forth. And I caught it and I really appreciated it.
I remember when we did that bedroom scene for Kevin's death, and Gabe showed me a little bit of what Troy, you know, the Wendigo, was doing. He's like, so you're going to kind of move like this throughout the room. And I just remember sitting there like, well, I can't move like Troy at all. Like, this is going to be crazy. They're like, you're going to jump on the bed, pick the bed up, and you're going to crawl around, like, you're, you know, reach around.
Yes.
The windshield. Like, okay.
And I like how the bed was used as an important set piece for that scene, because you're laying on the bed and as the Wendigo's reaching like into the window, you're reaching kind of under the bed at the same time. It just worked out very well. I love how y'all used that bed many different ways for that one scene.
One of my favorite shots was when Claire and Bree find Rye outside the house. And he's miming a McWindemeal. He's miming a McWindemeal.
Right.
I like it. Yeah.
A devouration, if you will. They bring him to the hospital after that, and they're like, this kid's on drugs. What the fuck?
Right.
And the next day, he's like, hey, Bree, let's go find a Christmas tree. And it rhymes, so you know it's fine. And so they go, y'all get the Christmas tree, right? Or no?
Yes. I made a comment about that very beginning of the episode, because he drags it down the road forever.
Right. Good. Later on, he goes to grandma and he's like, I eat, but I'm not full. And she reveals her secret past, where her father was being hunted down by the Wendigo. So this curse, that's why she's immortal, basically. Or at least she's had this long life, is because she is. Oh man, we skipped over this crucial part of the story where the dream catchers are part of what is protecting and binding certain aspects of the Wendigo, and also, like, well, we'll find out in a minute, it's kind of a weakness of the Wendigo. She's been alive because of these dream catchers. At least that's the way I interpreted what was happening in the film. And if I got it wrong, I got it wrong. I'm sorry. But she's been hanging these dream catchers up to, like, protect herself. And, the Wendigo is after her. So it's coming for her. And that's kind of like, it's kind of like Harry Potter and Voldemort, like, part of the same binding. Like,
right.
And I know there's probably other analogies that are similar, but, like, that's where my mind goes. Is to the Horcrux and how they're tied together. And I dig it. I really dig it. So she pleads to Ryan to, like, renounce the Wendigo, but he's like, nah, he's headstrong. Take you on. Take on anyone.
Good.
I like
that. That was too far. No.
No, oh, shit. The Windicrow is hunting down the last meth head, and he wrecks this boy's camper. It's Badger. This is Badger.
And, yeah, this guy's Badger.
Yeah, and he tries to escape in his truck. Oh, we talked about this scene. That's when you get the Wendigo reveal. Yeah, sorry.
It's okay, man. You're getting it. You're getting through it.
I'm trying to. The sheriff gets his comeuppance, and I want to say heatedly, passionately, because
fuck
I
that sheriff.
Fuck that sheriff's. Fuck Dude. Him. Because he's earlier.
I was edging the whole time, just waiting for this guy to die, dude. Yeah. I was like, yeah, he's gonna get it. I know he's gonna get it. He better fucking get it.
And it's he gets his face eaten off.
Yeah.
At first, I was like,
the practical gore.
Yeah, it was all practical.
Man. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
He added some blood spurts, but yeah, biting his face off, that was all a creation on set, you know?
Hell yeah, man. I love it.
But at first, 100. I was like, man, maybe the sheriff's like complicit. Maybe he's helping the meth heads.
I thought that too. I was like, man, this dude's in on it or something.
But then you find out he's just a piece of shit. Like, just bad at his job, incompetent. Like,
right.
No, you're on drugs. The meth heads are fine. You're on drugs. Like, oh,
right,
sure.
Right.
Sure, sheriff. But dude, I do want to give a shout out to Brian Cross, or Krause. Yeah. Krause.
He's great.
I remember him from watching Charmed when I was,
of course, yes,
yeah, you know, 20 years ago, something like that. I don't know. It's been a while. But yeah, he was a main actor on there for a good minute. So when I saw him, I was like, I know that guy. Oh, that's cool.
The Brian, when I first met Brian and I was talking to him, because he did a film called, was it Sleepwalker or what's the one where he
Sleepwalkers? Yeah, he did Sleepwalkers, a horror film.
I'm going to talk. The hotel, we're having dinner, and I was like, yeah, so you did that film, like, you know, I'm gonna do this weird like possession thing, like, do you have any like tips or anything that helped you during that moment? I was expecting this like huge profound like statement that would just change my life and the trajectory of my acting career. He just looks at me, he's like, oh hell man, I know what the hell I was doing at all.
Welcome to the nightclub. Yeah.
It was the 90s. Yeah, it was the 90s. Well, Brian and I had actually made a movie, in like first movie when I was in my 20s, and he was one of the leads in it called December. So I directed him as a teenager, and we'd been friends since. And and then I called him. I said, hey, we're gonna do the Michigan thing, you want to come out for a couple of weeks and do this sheriff? Because that's kind of his bread and butter now, is these like military guys and sheriffs and stuff. Mm-hmm. So he came out and did the part. So it was a lot of fun to work with him again.
That's a credit to his performance then, because like Ricky, I couldn't wait for this guy to fucking get his face ripped off and blood spurt all over.
Would you give me someone who I can't wait for, you know, some antagonist? I'm in it, dude. I'm in it.
So the Wendigo is like, oh shit, my avatar is getting attacked by his sister. I'm going to go back to the house and fucking hunt down the family. He breaks into the house looking like the Predator from Prey, straight up, which was a fucking 10. And he hates light fixtures. He's walking through the hallway, busting every goddamn light he can. And this is that shot where from the side, you see him looking at the door. And goddamn, I was like, this is cinematic gold right here. This is a Wendigo put on film in a way I've never seen one before. And there's plenty of shots in this entire sequence. Oh, thank you. Where you see the roots, and you from shot from behind, and like everything looks, it's like a haunting from a nightmare. Like if I would see that shit coming for me, like no, hell no, hell to the no. I don't know what the right word is I'm looking for, but it was a haunting depiction of a Wendigo. Whenever it was, it's done.
Yeah, there were a lot of influences. We wanted that, you know, the skull to sort of take over. And we kind of looked at Swamp Thing for his body a little bit. So you have those roots and forest kind of thing. So we put a lookbook together when we started the design process. And then it was done in a clay maquette first. And we had this clay maquette. And then it was sculpted full scale and then built in Toronto at Steve Newbern's shop. You know, he works with new Guillermo del Toro and a lot of his stuff. So then they came down to Michigan with the whole team with the suit, and Troy, who's from Toronto, and Troy, the actor who is in the Wendigo suit, was, you know, incredible. I mean, if you look at his his resume of creatures that he has done on screen. He's that rare breed of creature performer that's just done a, you know, a shit ton of amazing work. Unsung heroes because of the amount of time you spend in the makeup chair and in uncomfortable costumes. And Troy is also a master contortionist.
Oh, yeah.
So he can bend himself in all kinds of crazy ways. You know,
yeah, I looked him up.
Yeah, he's the best.
And he was
the sweetest man you'll ever want to meet, you know.
Oh, that's awesome.
I'm glad we touched on Troy right here before the climax, because what happens now is the family tries to run out of the house. The creature materializes in front of them, and they set him on, what did they set him on fire with?
A lantern.
A lantern.
That was the kerosene mom, Claire.
Real quick, that materialization scene, love that shit, by the way. Because it added to the mysticism.
Out of the shadow, yeah.
Like, because, I mean, the whole time you're just thinking that he's just, like, hanging out in the woods in between killing, you know?
Right.
But then you get to just see him fucking come out of nowhere, and you're like, oh, shit. Loved it.
Yeah, that boy.
That also was, just a quick note of that, that was also done practically, the flame. That was a stunt man in a stunt Wendigo suit, and then we doused him with, you know, propellant, and he was lit on fire. So it was a full body fire burn that was done.
Hell yeah.
There's like just a couple of CG flame shots, you know, when it gets started, but there was a guy on fire, like a stuntman burning.
Gagan or something too, like something that just, it would make sense that his name was that crazy. Like, I think I was
swearing.
Yeah, yeah.
We're hearing, I was like, of course it'd be Dragon or something crazy.
Dragon sets him on fire, boy. The family goes to hide out in the barn, and this is a fucking climax. This is like a Friday the 13th climax on crack. The Wendigo puts the fire out of itself. It's like, all right, and it tries to break in, and Bree mounts a tractor while Ryan is brandishing a pitchfork and stabbing at the creature, and Claire drops what to me looked like dream catchers onto the Wendigo. That's what it looked like. And maybe I'm wrong.
Because Rye had put the dream catchers, you know, took them off the house so that the Wendigo could get in. And then he stuck, we see him throw them up in the barn, and then she's able to drop them on the Wendigo. And it kind of, the whole idea I had was, it's kind of like holy water. You know, they burn him when they make contact with him.
I love it. I love it.
You know, that was just a creation. Again, there's no, you know, legend to that.
I think it's a real cool integration of the vampire and the Wendigo together. Sure. That's really dope.
It was kind of like, just again, you know, more of these classic tropes. And then that, up just to go into that barn scene a little bit, was, you know, that was kind of influenced by Aliens. You know, it was kind of like, it's kind of like Ripley with the machine, you know, coming after the alien, but it's like, you know, she's going after the Wendigo with this tractor. And I was telling the writer, write me something like that, where I can have this mechanical thing that can, you know, attack the flesh and blood thing of the Wendigo, but then it doesn't.
Ricky,
you know,
just
so that's very, very Aliens influenced for
Ricky,
sure.
Ricky and Trevor just got hard-ons right now on the podcast.
I want to apologize now.
You have
I'm
to see
the
reference,
of my computer desk.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, I love that you said that, because I'm going to be honest.
The get away from her, you bitch.
But now it's like, oh, shit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's the get away from her, you bitch, you know?
Dope. Yeah, whenever Bree rams this motherfucker with the tractor and lowers the bucket onto the Wendigo and pins him down, which I'm like, is she splitting him in half? But my boy, the Wendigo, the Wendicrow, he gets up and he's like, aah! And Grandma shows up out of nowhere with a magic staff. And Marco, this is your time to shine, man. This is when you take on your full action hero, horror movie lead role, and you're like, fuck it, I'm going to get this staff. I'm going to ward this creature off. Dude, you're face to face with a Wendigo.
Yeah.
Your balls had to suck up into your abdomen right here. this part is so cool, because you get these again, like the folk horror, the Native American, the chanting, because Grandma goes off into the woods, she's luring the Wendigo away, she's got her dream catcher from when she was a little girl. You get the flashback of her as a little girl. I think it's a flashback, or maybe it's just a symbolic.
Yeah. it's flashing back because it's very, it's sort of rhyming. She's there on the ground, and in the past, the Wendigo's coming up on her, and in the present. So we're sort of going back and forth visually with the screen placement and everything. So yeah,
I like it. And as
I was gonna say, and you're also just getting a little bit more from some of the scenes at the beginning of the movie of her when she was younger, because you do see her with a dream catcher in the teepee, but you don't see what's happening next, right? So there's more of the story being unveiled to you at the very end.
Yeah, and that's the dream catcher her father gives her to protect her, and it's literally that same dream catcher that the little girl holds. Grandma's now holding it, you know, hundreds of years later. It's the same one.
I like it as both. I like to think of it as both a flashback or like picturing that deep down inside she's still this little girl that's scared of this fucking thing, and you know, like, so I kind of have both.
Oh, I like what you did there. Yeah, that's good.
It's kind of, and when I was watching it, I took it both ways. I was like, it could be this way, it could be that way. Like, I liked both ideas, but this horrible monster is sneaking up on her, and the family bands together, and they are attacking the shit out of this thing, stabbing it, fucking putting dream catchers up against its face, burning the hell out of it. And the whole time this is happening, I'm just sitting back watching this movie like, wow, this is a Wendigo attack scene. Like, it's just, I'm just speaking for me, I've been a longtime fan of the Wendigo, the lore, the creature, everything about it. And to see it done this way, I've never seen it done this way, to this effect, to this extent. And I'm like, this is like a horror movie wet dream almost. Like, I wanted to see this, and I didn't know how I was going to get it.
Yeah, this is like a bucket list type of horror movie. Something that, like, everybody or most people want, you know? Because if you, dude, yeah, let's watch a real-ass Wendigo movie.
Yeah,
a real-ass Wendigo. You want to watch a real-ass Wendigo horror movie? Let's do it.
Not just people that are possessed by the Wendigo. Not just people that are dreaming about a Wendigo. There's a real fucking Wendigo. And it looks amazing. It looks really cool. So, Marco, when y'all are filming this scene, like take me through it, man. Like, what's going on here with the fucking the Wendigo action?
Oh, we were all excited. I mean, that was another, you know, it was a night shoot, and we're all cold as hell. And just
I like how Gabe takes a little bit of pleasure out of that. I like how he
actually, he was a little warm and toasty. We were just running around. But yeah, I remember that scene where, you know, he's going after Grandma, and I come running in. I'm like, no, Grandma. He turns around, grabs my throat. I remember one of those takes, Troy, like, leaned in a little bit, and this little porcelain tooth knocked the bridge of my nose. And I was like, oh, shit. Thought I broke it, cracked it right there, but it was okay. But just that
You cracked a tooth in that scene?
No. Is one of the teeth from the Wendigo.
Oh, my bad.
Caught the bridge of my nose. I was fine though, no break. But no, just like that type of action, seeing all that adrenaline and stuff like that, it's so much fun to shoot. I just love stuff like that. Yeah, it was just a blast. I would just do it all over again if I could.
Before we get to the climax, like, well, we are at the climax, but before we get to the final, what happens to solve everything, Gabe, what was your inspiration for writing this story? And yeah, like basically that, what was your inspiration for writing this? And fill us in if you can.
Well, it was actually written by a friend of mine, Brent Jordan.
Sorry. Shout out to Brent Jordan. My bad.
Full credit to Brent Jordan. And, you know, the genesis of it was, you know, I had never worked in this genre. I had always wanted to. And, you know, I do more character-driven stuff. But some friends of mine who had been, you know, forming a production company and making, you know, starting to make some films came to me and said, would you be interested in doing, we want to do a horror film. And I said, sure, if the script is good and if it has some real characters. And they go, well, do you have one? And I said, no. And then I asked my friend Brent, I go, have you written any horror recently? Because there's an opportunity to do a low budget horror film if you have a script. And he's like, no. And they were like saying, well, it's got to be shot in Michigan. It's got to be winter. There's barns. And so they were kind of specific about what they wanted to do. And I told this to Brent. And Brent said, have you ever heard of the Wendigo? And I was like, no. And he started sending me pictures of the Wendigo. And then I went, oh, this is cool. And then,
fuck yeah.
And then I sent the pictures to the producers and like, oh, great, send us the script. And I said, there is no script. And so Brent set about writing the script, and we were literally writing the script as I was going to Michigan to look at the locations. I go, hey, we found this cool old barn, write the meth lab in a barn. You know, so I was kind of like feeding, I was sending him pictures of things while the scenes were being constructed, and we were writing it back and forth during the location scouting. So tailoring it to these very, you know, cool, creepy, gothic horror locations that we were finding in the middle of nowhere, Michigan.
That's like a big collaboration right there. That's in the moment collaboration right there.
It was pretty, you know, I generally like to sit with the script a while and tweak it and maybe have it for a few months and come back and read it. And there was none of that. This was like writing the script up until the moment, you know, you're going to start shooting. So that was very new for me as well, a little uncomfortable, but you know, I was rolling with it at the time. And then we began the casting process. So the scenes were written by the time, you know, we started to send it out and, you know, Marco did the scenes and stuff like that.
That's amazing. That's amazing that you guys, because I tell you what, like watching the film, you don't get that at all with the dialogue, the writing, scene by scene, any of that. Like this does not look like something that was written in a hurry. You know what I'm saying?
Or like
Brent's very good. He's just a wonderful writer, and that's I've collaborated with him on a number of projects, so it's great to work with him.
It definitely felt lived in, like the whole thing. I agree, Rick. Like it wasn't like it didn't feel hodgepodged or anything like that. But it's amazing to know that y'all were quick on the fly,
so quick with it. Yeah,
that's
awesome.
That's like part of the art, right? That's like Evil Dead style. That's Texas Chainsaw style. That's what they did back then.
And it was great because I would find a cool location, and then I'd say, we got to work this barn into the and make that the meth, because originally the meth was like in an abandoned trailer. And there was no well, there was a river, and they were, you know, he was drowned in the river. And I go, there's this, you know, maybe make it a well because there's no river next to this barn. And then we literally dug that hole where the well is and then built a little section of the well, you know, on our stage, you know, where he's down inside it.
Yeah.
And that was all sort of fun. We built that little section as well. So I thought the well was creepier than having him drown in a river, which was Brent's original version, so we went with the well instead, that kind of thing.
Oh, good hell choice. Yeah. Yeah, that's like that's got Ring vibes in it, you know.
Love it. Love a good well.
So this movie, well, the official climax is Grandma finally decides, you know what, very Pumpkinhead style, like Gabe said, this is Lance Henriksen with a sandpaper face fucking doing the goddamn thing, and Grandma does the goddamn thing. She stabs herself with that little dagger, and basically you get a Wendigo meltdown. He collapses into swamp water is what I'm going to call it basically. And unfortunately G-Maw passes away, but this film,
but that's what she wanted. She's been alive too long, you know?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I feel like a couple hundred years is probably enough. Yeah.
The film wraps up with the family making it's a shrine for Grandma, right? Out in the woods. Or is that her grave?
That's their burial ground. That's the cemetery where, you know, the Wendigo's conjuring. So there's generations of her family there.
Okay. Oh, that makes it even deeper. Yeah. Hell yeah. And right before the family leaves, Rye hangs a dream catcher on the porch. I think that's a phenomenal way to end this story. It's like a little bit of protection for Grandma right here, and a little bit of, the way I took it, just a little bit of love and good luck for everybody.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it was a scene that I told Brent to put in. It wasn't in the original script because I really wanted to show Rye's character arc. Because remember, you can demonstrate character growth by rhyming scenes. So, you know, earlier in the movie, he's pulling all these things out, and he's like, what are those things, you know? And the sister even has to tell him they're dream catchers, doofus, you know, and he has no, you know, no connection to the cultural relevance. And here in the end, we see him, you know, very reverently hanging this again. So it's really a strong, a strong demonstration of who he's become. And that kind of stuff is really important to me in films, whether it's a horror film or a comedy. You really need to take your characters on a full journey.
We got the full journey and we fucking wrapped up. We wrapped up also with a dope ass credit sequence with beautiful artwork at the very end, which that just ties it together. That's like when you're watching the movie and the movie's done. Some people, if they're at home, they hit stop. Some people, if they're at the theaters, they get up and walk out. I like a credit sequence that makes me sit there and just take a moment, take a breath, digest a little bit what I just saw, but also enjoy something visually visual splendor, you know?
I wanted to do something cool, and it was, it's not easy. You had to, it was a day of shooting. I had to get, my cameraman back and black tarp a room and put the skull up and put Dreamcatcher and shoot all these elements and then work with a designer to design that sequence. I wanted something that was like, no credits at the beginning and then do this sort of Marvel movie kind of really big animated, larger than life kind of fun vibe to the credits in the end.
I think it gives it a proper send off and, like you said, an epic send off. Yeah. Fucking A. That was The Wendigo, a brand new 2024 folk horror goddamn blast. And it's available where's it available again, Gabe?
Amazon, Vudu, Apple Movies, and a bunch of other VOD platforms.
Basically, Google The Wendigo 2024. You're going to find the fucking film. And guess what, listeners? There's going to be a link in the show notes. You can go and find it right there. I encourage, if you listen this far and you hadn't seen the movie, we warned you off earlier, but if you listen to it, I know you want to watch it now. I know you do, so go watch it. We're going to do some final thoughts and ratings on The Wendigo, and we're going to go ahead and start with the director of the film himself. Gabe, final thoughts and ratings on your movie.
You want me to rate my own movie?
I want you to give me your final thoughts. Final thoughts and ratings.
Final thoughts. I think, if you enjoy classic old school horror, 80s, 90s, I'd say check out The Wendigo. It was made by people who have a reverence for those films, the Pumpkinheads and all of that kind of stuff. And we went into it wanting to create that kind of vibe, that kind of filmmaking. The writer, myself, the DP, we're all, from that generation. The designer, Steve Koch, who designed The Wendigo, came up through all those, creature shops and stuff. So if you have a love of that vibe and that genre of that time period, dig into The Wendigo. You'll love the gore, you'll love the story, and you'll love the practical creature. I don't know. You want me to rate it?
Normally,
yes, I do.
On this show,
rated on what, a scale of what?
We normally on this show we do a scale of 1 to 10. That's our normal rating, but you could rate it however you want to.
I will give it an 8. An honest 8.
An honest
I'd say
eight.
It's solid. Not The Exorcist.
I like it.
It is hell not Ed Wood, so I'd give it an 8.
That's a lot of love.
That's a lot of love.
That's a lot of love.
All right, Marco, you're the lead actor in this film. You are the motherfucking G in this movie, cuh? I want to know what your final thoughts and ratings are in this movie.
All righty. Well, Like I said, we had a lot of fun making the movie. We put in a lot of hard work, a lot of late nights, long hours. If you're looking for a film to be entertained, to have fun with, and just to watch a good old creature feature, definitely check this film out. You won't be upset. You'll love it. Yeah, but I think it's just good. It is a Christmas film. I'll say that right now.
Hell yes.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah, I agree.
Watch it to bring the family together. I'll say that.
And yeah.
There you go.
That's right. Yeah. That's sweet. I like that.
It's true, Bo. Yeah.
The rating now. I was going to say 8 out of 10, too. I was going to give it an 8 out
okay.
of 10.
Okay.
Sorry, I thought my performance could have gone a little deeper. I could have done a little bit there, but 8 out of 10.
Okay.
Nice.
All right. Cody, you don't get to rate this because you didn't watch it. Anyway, I'm going to go first, and I'm going to do this nightclub style.
Oh, shit.
Oh, shit.
Oh, God.
First and foremost, I appreciate the cinematography, the attention to the lore, even the made-up lore. I like the integration of the lore. The practical effects are top-notch. I think they're paced very well. You get enough gore and enough costume effects or costume framing, especially the way you frame the costume. The story is simple but effective. It's not, you don't need this grand, insane story to tell to do what this movie's doing. And it works for what this movie
well
is,
said.
For the practical effects, for the cinematography, for the vibe it gave me. Because again, when earlier tonight, when Marco said out the gate that he was a fan of Are You Afraid of the Dark, I told my girlfriend before she left, while I was watching the movie, I said, this movie makes me feel like I'm watching a feature length Are You Afraid of the Dark or Goosebumps episode, but that's done on a professional level with R-rated, you know, for adults type of thing. Look at Ricky and Trev. Look at them. They're looking at me.
Yeah, I'm looking at you.
I can feel it.
Give it.
I can
do
just
it, bro.
Feel it.
I can
do
feel it.
It.
He's about to
do
it.
Do it.
He's going to do it.
Fucking do
I can
it.
Tell he's going to do it. He's got him.
It's a 10.
Yeah.
Yeah, boy.
I think this is an awesome movie. And I think everybody out there, for the reasons that Gabe and Marco said, get the vibes, come back and check it out. Like if you haven't seen the movie, go see it. It's out there. It's available. And if you want those vibes, they're there for you. It's waiting for you. Go watch The Wendigo.
That was good, Travis.
Rickles, you want to close us out? I'll go next, bud.
Sure. It don't matter.
All right. Yeah. I mean,
all
Travis,
right. So Ricky, what do you think?
Son of a bitch. Travis said a lot of what I wanted to say. You don't always need a complex storyline to make a great movie. The movie was succinct. It didn't waste anything. You know, there's some movies that just throw some stuff at the wall and you just have a whole bunch of extra and you're just sitting there going like, why? Like, this isn't really towards the plot or anything like that. So it kind of throws you off. Whereas this movie was, the pacing was very good. Yes. Cutting room footage. This movie was very well paced. It was very well put together. It told the story. It stayed to the plot line. It didn't try to go all different crazy places. I loved the gore. I know we didn't get into details because we were trying to be spoiler alert, but I'm just gonna say log splitter.
Also
sheet of tin.
Yeah.
Sheet of tin.
I liked it.
The sheet of tin. I was like, yes.
The sheet
I've
metal
worked,
kills.
I've, good. I've worked
like
with
how
sheet
that
metal.
Sounds.
That shit is sharp. I'm just gonna let you know.
Yeah,
sheet metal is sharp. I have cut my hand. Wear
I've got
gloves.
Many a tetanus
so,
from it. Yeah.
Yes.
Many
so,
a tetanus.
So, but I love
it's an intimidating piece of earth.
How about pinning him to the ground with a machete? That's just like
yes, like, yes, yes.
Hell yeah.
I loved it all. I loved all the gore. It's look, I'm watching a horror movie. I want to see the blood. I want to see the guts, especially if a Wendigo is involved. Okay, just letting you know. if you don't know from the nightclub listeners, guests,
now you know.
We are some folk horror lovers over here, right? So, I mean, you're right up our alley, obviously. I think initially I was kind of at an 8 when I first watched it, but I love talking about it. especially with y'all, because getting the insights and everything else.
Yes.
I'm not quite going to give it a 10, but I'm going to give it a 9. So I'm still going to beat both of y'all out. I don't even really know what my gripes are. It just didn't feel like a 10 to me. I love the movie, though. I'm probably going to watch it for Christmas now. I think it's going to be the annual Christmas watch.
When he watches it on Christmas and put
that up? Yes.
When he watches it on Christmas, it's going to be a 10.
Probably. So I will say the rewatch, there is room to grow. Okay.
Yeah. Fuck yeah.
And anybody who listens to us knows that, like, we do give our ratings, but those aren't hard forever ratings. Okay. Those are ratings for now and in the moment.
Fluid always.
And I've only seen this movie once. And honestly, the rewatches are usually what really determines the final score for me.
Right.
So I'm hoping on the rewatch with the insight that it bumps it up to that 10. But great Trevor movie, guys.
Trevor, don't ever watch your movie right the first time.
No. So
Cody never watches a movie the first time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, he watched the movie.
Rickle Bickle, please take us home, sir. It's up to you, bitch.
All right. I'm taking us home. So I agree with everything y'all said. Oh, I love you, bud. I agree with everything y'all said. Like, sure. You like that, bro?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, y'all. I'm a.
No,
I'm peaking right now.
We're
I'm
all there. Right we're now. All.
Yeah.
Gabe and Marco are like, what are we looking at right now?
Oh, yeah. I am on the marijuana right now. So there you go. like you guys have been saying, the practical effects, the gore, we jump straight into it with a gnarly ass cold open. You're gonna make me laugh, bro. Stop.
I'm sorry, man.
And the setting, I love this wintry, woodsy setting, the set pieces, the acting, the effects, the score. Those drums and the chanting in the beginning, like, you had me by the balls from the get-go, and you had me the whole time, because the pacing was done well. There was visual storytelling, which you don't see all the time. You don't always get the type of cinematography that tells the story. And that's something that when I see it and I notice it, I fucking love it. All that being said, I'ma just get straight to my score before I start laughing again. But I'm thinking I'm gonna split the difference. I'ma give this a 9.5 with lots of room to grow on a rewatch or multiple, because this could easily be on my annual Christmas horror list. Like, straight up. Like, when Christmas comes around, I love to throw on all the Christmas horror movies. So, you know, easy.
There you go, everybody. I would say that's an average of a nightclub 10 out of 10.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why not? I mean,
this, everyone out there, you heard Gabe, you heard Marco, you heard the whole goddamn rigmarole. Go watch The Wendigo. It's available on all VOD platforms right the fuck now. So don't wait for it. We did the goddamn thing. I want to thank you, Gabe. I want to thank you, Marco, both for sharing your time with us tonight.
Yes.
You are welcome back to the nightclub anytime to discuss any film, because we love to do breakdowns. We love to have fun. So y'all are welcome back anytime. Straight
and
up.
This is a big party for us. So, you know, you can come talk about, I don't know, whatever
aliens.
Movie you want. Aliens.
Yeah,
you want to talk about aliens or Pumpkinhead, man? Like,
or the Greasy Strangler?
Oh well, my God!
Woo. We're doing that one tomorrow night. We can't do that now.
Right?
They can come back for a second round of it. We can do it later.
y'all can if y'all want to. We're doing it tomorrow night. I'm just saying.
When I'm not doing horror films like this, my day job is I direct unsolved mysteries on Netflix.
Yes.
And I've got a Mothman episode, and I've got a couple of UFO episodes out there. I'm revisiting Roswell this season. So if you ever want to talk about those shows, I'm sure the Netflix
will be up
for it.
Yeah, please? We definitely want to.
That would be amazing.
All,
That would be wonderful.
We're big UFO, Mothman, Bigfoot, all that shit fans.
Hold on. I got to put it back.
Got them all. So that's my other personality.
The I love it. Yeah, look at that spicy alien. That's how you know we love it.
Look, there you go. Yeah, there it is.
No, for real though. Like, yeah, fucking Unsolved Mysteries. What's my boy from Back in the Gap? What's his name?
Robert Stack.
Yeah, that was my childhood. His voice.
Was my childhood. Yep. Creepy music, everybody remembers. Yep.
Fuck yeah. Yep. Marco, thank you so much for being on the nightclub, man. I really appreciate you being here, and you're welcome back any fucking time, dude.
Thanks for having me, y'all. Means a lot.
We appreciate it. I do have a quick question before we sign off.
Okay.
If you don't mind. I wanted to ask y'all, if you could do another horror movie, any type of horror movie that you want to do, what would it be? Acting, directing, I don't care. You could act in it, direct it. Marco, you want to do some directing? That's fine. Gabe, we'll start with you, though, bud. You did The Wendigo. You did a folk horror. You did it a great job. If there's another different genre of horror that you can do, what would it be?
It would definitely be a great ghost story.
Yeah. Yes! Oh, yeah, good haunting that ghost story.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
I love supernatural stuff. That's my alley, for sure.
I love a good haunted house, too. Oh. Yeah. Yes. Oh, yeah, Marco. What would you want to do in the horror genre if you got another one?
Yeah, so I'd like to just dive deeper into Native American lore and things like that. So I don't know if there's a Dear Woman film out there, project in the works, but I'd like to dive deeper and check that out.
So, Marco, I want to say that last year for our 2023, every year we do an end-of-the-year horror list of our top 15s. We just released one, so y'all can check that out if y'all want. I watched a pair of horror movies, and one was based on a Jewish horror history story. Travis, do you remember what the offering? It was The Offering, right?
Yeah.
I watched that, and then I think I turned around and I watched another one that had like a Middle Eastern kind of demonish type background drop. So I just wanted to say I love the different cultures. And the horror stories are just the stories in general that come to the horror genre, right? Like, look, I love possession movies. I love ghost movies. But there's a whole lot of Christianity out there. And I would love to just experience. So, like, when I get stuff like The Wendigo, I'm like, hell yeah. You know, like Native American horror stories. This is awesome. But it's I want more. I want more for sure.
It's a good way to learn, like, another culture. Get your interest piqued in another culture. Like, that's even deeper than horror. Like, that'll get you interested in another culture altogether.
And I love it when a movie does that.
Yeah.
And being people of culture also, you know, Cajuns, we have a certain culture about us. And so when I see movies about heritage and whatnot, like, I'm always like, yeah,
And you know what? There ain't enough Cajun horror movies out there. And you know who's going to make the first one? The fucking nightclub, bitch. It's gonna happen one day.
Yeah.
Thank you, Gabe. Thank you, Marco.
Awesome. Thank you, guys. Appreciate you placing the film.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Thank you all for being here.
All right, what you're gonna want to do is grab your trusty house axe, walk into the woods. Chop a tree down aggressively, and then at the end of your movie, forget to put the "no trees were harmed in the making of this movie" caution.
Embrace your heritage and stop being so goddamn soft, boy.
Boom! Hell
yeah. If you come across a barn that smells a little funny and it happens to be a meth lab, just don't go inside.
That's advice to live by.
That's wise advice. Wake up and smell the smelling salt, Sujitsu.